Okay, so the organizers asked me to talk about seismology of OB stars and more specifically on the overshooting in the convective core and interior rotation. But as always, the speakers do what they want. And so I'm mostly going to talk about B stars. And I'm going to leave the O stars to Melanie Godard, who is here too, and that's her favorite topic. So just a quick reminder for those of you who are not familiar with these massive stars. They are up there in the upper left corner of the HR diagram. And what I like about those stars is that they are very simple compared to sort of like stars or Delta Scutis and hot things like that, because they have a very simple internal structure with just a convective core and a very large radiative envelope. They are slightly more complicated than that, and I'll talk about that later, but mostly they're simple. O stars are the most massive ones. They have winds, they have massless, and they pulsate. B stars are the ones that are slightly lower mass, and I will separate them in three types of stars. The BE stars, which are fast rotators, they have emission lights, they pulsate, they're very complicated, so I don't like them. I leave them to Coali, who's here, I think. SPB and Beta Cephei stars, who are the ones that I'm going to talk about mostly today. The SPB stars have masses around 4 to 7 solar masses. They're multiperiodic. Their periods are very of the order of a day, and they pulsate mostly in high-order G modes. Beta Cephei stars are slightly more massive. They're also multiperiodic pulsators, mostly slow rotators, and they have periods of a few hours. They pulsate in the with low order P and G modes. They have a very sparse spectrum. And recently there have been some observed Beta Cephei stars that are called hybrid because they also have some high order G modes. So this is what I'm going to talk about mostly today. Why did they ask me to talk about convective core overshooting and rotation? Well, I guess that's because it's very important, because if you include rotation or overshooting in the models, in the evolution models, it changes a lot the evolution tracks in the HR diagram. So if you add rotation or if you add overshooting, the star lives longer, burns more hydrogen, and so the tracks are move a lot in the HR diagram. So when we model a star, I will talk about that later, we actually always try to find a model where the star is at the observed place in the HR diagram. So if you don't have the overshooting right or the rotation right, you don't model the right star. Just a quick historical background. So prehistory in terms of B stars is before 1992. So it's not very long ago. We were all born, I think, mostly. Because before 1992, there was no way to explain variability in the observed Beta Cephei stars. The reason was that the opacities were completely wrong, the Los Alamos opacities, especially for the iron group elements, which are responsible for the variation in those, for the excitation of the modes in those stars. So in the 1990s, early 1990s, the opal opacities were calculated, and from that, it was possible to explain the variability in the Beta Cephei stars. Before this century, I would say that there was not much done in terms of asteroid seismology of B stars because we didn't have data to do that. So it's only in the early 21st century that because of multi-site ground-based campaign, huge campaigns, a few stars were observed for very long times, and it was possible to find several oscillation modes, oscillation frequencies in those stars, and to do real asteroseismology. I will tell you how you do that. And then, of course, the present times is the space missions. So, like I say, only in 1992 was it possible to explain the variability in the Beta Cephei stars. In 1998, there's a paper by Pam Yatnik. They produced these instability strips for the Beta Cephei and SPB pulsators. And I just want to point out that the problem is not entirely solved, because there are a few Beta Cephei stars with several oscillation modes observed, and where we cannot explain the highest modes that are observed. They're not excited with the theoretical models. By changing the opacity tables, going from opal to op, by slightly changing the composition, taking the new solar composition rather than the old ones, we can improve the problem a little bit. We excite a little more modes, but still we don't explain everything. So there are several ideas going around, like accumulation of iron in the right zone in the star, or maybe some opacities are still missing. So there's still work to do there. So how we model these stars? We do forward modeling. So we use standard stellar evolution code, and then we add in some interesting physics when we cannot explain what we see. I will go quickly. So just quickly, because I think that most people here are more familiar with solar type stars and solar type oscillations rather than what we see in these stars. They are very different, and we study them very differently. What we have in those B stars are long-lived modes, so they're not stochastically excited, they're long-lived. And so we don't have the problem of the lifetime of the modes. We have spare spectrum of low-order, low-degree PNG modes in the case of Beta Cephei, and high-order, many high-order G modes in the case of SPBs. But we don't have a comb-like structure like you have in the Sun, and we cannot work with the shell diagrams and things like that. So that means that we absolutely need some way of knowing what the modes that we see are in order to do the modeling. And so that means we need mode identification, so either multicolor photometry or spectroscopy. And we don't work with large frequency separations and small frequency separation. We actually fit exactly the frequencies. We also don't have the surface effects problem in these stars. So just to show you what the spectrum looks like, this is this is the evolution of a few low-order PNG modes in a B star. The thick dots, colored dots, are the modes that are excited. So you see here that the excitation is mostly in the middle of the main sequence for those stars, and the lower the metallicity, the fewer excited modes we have, because it's the iron that's responsible for the excitation. So the nice thing is that you can see that the range of modes excited also corresponds to the region where we have avoided crossings. So these are very important, because I will not go in details on that, but this means that these are mixed modes, so modes that have P kind of behavior in the envelope and G mode behavior near the core. So this means that these modes are capable of giving us some information about what happens in very near the core, and I will show you an example later. Another thing we can do is get some information about the internal profile of this in the star, internal rotation profile, and that's done by constructing a kernel. This omega of r being the rotation profile in the star, we have the kernel k, which is related to the, where do I put that? The is related to the to each oscillation mode, and they have the oscillation kernel being different for different modes. If we have several different multiplets in the star, we have information about the rotation at different depths in the star. And so this has been done for two Beta Cephei stars, and in both cases, the result was that the angular velocity is faster when you go towards the core. So these stars now is believed rotate with a differential internal rotation profile. Of course, this is very, I would say, coarse, because we only have those two stars, 2 points in the star where we can get the kernel, because we only have two multiplets. Hopefully, we'll get stars with more, but it's going very slowly. So this is, these are a few stars that have been studied extensively based on ground observations. I just wanted to point out what we've learned from the ground-based observations before going into the space. Asterius' measure of B stars gives us a very precise information when we see the star on its mass, location in the HR diagram, and age. Based on some assumptions we do about the rotation and the amount of overshooting, of course, but we've been able to put into evidence the presence of core overshooting in most of the stars, but the core overshooting, the amount that we have to put in to fit the observed frequency varies from star to star, so that's something that we can probably learn more about by having more stars and looking at exactly the relation between that, maybe the rotation, we don't know. We've been able to show that there's still a problem with the opacities, or at least the ion group elements distribution in the star. And also the fact that, well, if we don't have the good mode identification, we get the completely wrong model for the star, so that's very important. So going into the space age, because that's the title of the program here, Coro has observed a few B stars. There's the first one up there is a Beta Cephei star, and Coro was observed 11 independent frequencies, many more combination frequencies, and this star was also the reason for a controversy about possibly detection of solar type oscillations that has still to be confirmed. It's not completely sure yet, but at least they've been observed in all stars, that's for sure. And then there's a very interesting star, this one. This one is not interesting. the one above, which is an SPB star, and in that SPB, and I'm going to talk more about what's been done with this star. First, a little theoretical background. A few years ago, Miller wrote a paper on how the periods of high gravity, high order gravity modes behave in an SPB star. I think a lot of that was known for, I think, white dwarfs, but it's based on that, there was this paper, and so the periods depend on the, of course, Bund-Weissach frequency N here, and also on the where the core of the boundary of the convective core is, and also, of course, So they will give us information about what happens near the core. This is a little more like we do with the solid type oscillations. We look at spacings, but instead of looking at frequency spacing, we look at period spacings. And the deviations, what is interesting is the deviation from constant period spacing. And the deviation, the deviation from constant period spacing depends on the shape, the exact shape of the Bund-Weissach frequency, which has a sharp feature near the core boundary. And depending on the shape of this feature near the core boundary, the periods, the spacings, will behave differently. If we assume a very sharp Bund-Weissach profile, so what happens if you don't put overshooting, or if you put a very abrupt kind of overshooting, then you have a very periodic sinusoidal kind of behavior around the mean value of the frequency spacing. And the frequency of that sinusoidal, the period of the sinusoidal variation depends on the age, the state of evolution of the star. But if you have a more smooth gradient, like you would have if there is rotational mixing near the core, turbulent mixing, then the feature disappears. And so it's very different. And so this could be a diagnostic to see what the shape of the Bund-Weisseler frequency is, and therefore give us some information about the mixing at near the core. So the way Milio et al. Looked at that is they mimicked the hydrogen profile you can get with a code that has velocity, that has a rotation, and they mimic that with a turbulent velocity diffusion coefficient, and they applied that to the Corot star, because the Corot star was observed with many high-order G modes, and there is, among these modes, a regular spacing, and if you plot the spacings in terms of the period, you see that it varies sinusoidally, but with a decreasing amplitude with period. And that is more like this than like this, obviously. And so it's really, they were able to conclude from that there is not a sharp variation of hydrogen composition near the core. It's a smooth gradient of grad mu. And so they're able to rule out a sharp gradient. What we can hope from the STR seismology of B stars, well, first of all, and that's interesting, of course, get precise values of the basic, I will not say boring, stellar parameters. Information on the core overshooting, so what kind of mixing happens near the core, and what's the extent of the mixing, so that's important because we need to know that in order to fit correctly the stars. Information on the interior rotation profile, if we have enough data. And so what we need to be able to get that information is very long and continuous observations from space, because in fact these stars need a very long observation to resolve the periods, the frequencies. Follow-up from ground is a necessity because we need to have reliable mode identification and also, well, basically good stellar parameters, and it's very hard for the B stars. Improved abundances and opacities to explain what we observe, and of course improved stellar evolution and annihilation course to include the effects of rotation and things like that.
Questions? So let me ask a question. So there are differences between different pulsating stars. So some have lots of modes, some don't. And is there any correlation with the magnetic field?
No, I don't think so. Not that I know of.
Some of the B stars may be magnetized. We must know them now, right? I don't understand now.
I don't think that so far, but maybe some observers know that better than me, that I don't think that there's a clear correlation now between the magnetic field and the pulsations in those
but
stars.
Why does that one you show, that the one that shows so oh, me, right. So why is that one, the one that appeared in the Nature article, why is that one show so many modes while other ones don't? Is there any reason for
it? Well, why this one shows and not other SPBs, because the other SPBs, I think, have not been observed for a long enough time to resolve those very low-frequency modes. That's one reason.
The future is
so I think that if we have more, so I didn't say it, but Corot has a few of these stars, you know, not a whole lot, and Kepler has no beta Cephei stars. I think too bright for Kepler, and I think that Kepler does observe SPB stars, a few, maybe that's So it's not sure. So we have very few stars to work with. That's the problem.
And when you showed the initial data, in fact, this initial data, it strikes me there's an interesting question for us to interpret the lack of a smooth boundary. Because in simulations, we get a smoothing of the boundary simply from convection. But then if we add rotation, we get an additional effect. So I think we've got two parameters here. So it'd be very interesting to look observationally at which stars are smooth and how that correlates with their rotational period.
Yeah, as soon as we have enough stars to do that.
We can wait.
Well.
Okay, just an information about B stars. Coralie and Hideyuki Sayo has done a seismic modeling of two late B stars, where they have shown that it is necessary to include an extra mixing of about 0.35 pressurized scale to explain this frequency obtained. And we have done an interpretation with Patrick Egenberger from Geneva, and we explained that one part, almost 0.1 HP, is due to rotational mixing, and the other part must be due to overshooting, and it corresponds to prediction that has been done, for example, by the hash code groups.
There is also this observational fact about the B stars, the pulsating B stars. They've been shown to have a slight nitrogen excess, and that can only be explained so far with some kind of mixing, rotational mixing. But the amount that's needed to agree with the observations is much too high unless the stars have spun down a lot. So that's still something that's not completely clear.
As far as I understand, you get rotational mixing if you have differential rotation. So can you see that, and do you have rotational splittings, and do you see that?
I showed a couple of stars where we have rotational splittings in order to see if the star is differentially rotating. You need several splittings, mm-hmm. and the most we have is two so far, and for both stars, and this was those stars here. For both of those stars, we show that there's a differential rotation.
But it would be good if you have one target that has differential rotation and the smooth
Well, the splittings here we have for the beta Cepheid stars, and the information on the smooth core boundary we have for an SPB star. We so far have no hybrid star where we can do everything together.
You can have rotational mixing even without differential rotation. So, well, yeah. So it's, you know, of course we don't know exactly how it works, but theory tells that we can do it even without differential rotation. In fact, some 1D solution calculation models, for example, include magnetic fields to also achieve high degree of nitrogen enrichment without adding any differential rotation in their interiors, which are basically solid rotation.
A comment and maybe a question. The comment is that Kepler, of course, is looking to a field where there are no hot B stars, unfortunately. So that's probably the reason why we have no beta Cepheid stars. I would expect there should be SPB stars. I frankly don't know. And I see I have to fire Hans because he has left the room. So. He might have an idea about that. We should discuss that this afternoon. On this star, HD50230, two questions. First of all, has there been more analysis of the data on this star since the Nature paper? Because that was really very preliminary, of course. And there was a promise that you might be able to characterize a star much more precisely than done then, and therefore get more precise constraints. So that's one question. The second question is, what's known about the rotation of that star? because I think the SPP stars have a tendency to be fairly fast rotators, and that would complicate the oscillation spectrum, of course.
Peter is here, and he's going to answer your questions.
First of all, I'm sorry that it takes so long to get the follow-up paper done, but it's almost out there. And second, we have spectra of this star, and the Vsin I is very, very low for this one. It's barely detectable, so you're at 5 kilometers, maybe 10 kilometers a second. Of course, that's projected rotational velocity. Sorry?
It could be seen polar.
Yes, of course. But so also for that star, there are P modes detected, and there are splittings there, so it's a very promising target.
What's the result?
We're not there yet.
Okay, if I might comment on that, I remember from some paper from many years ago that SPB stars observationally tend to be slow rotators. No. But even taking into account this rotation of about 10 kilometers per second or less, we might still have problems, because at this rotation rate, the rotational splitting might become comparable to period spacing between modes, and you get multiplet mixed. So I would like to know how you address this problem in the case of a star.
I don't think it's true in the P mode regime.
No, only in G mode regime. For P modes, it's not a problem.
Okay. Maybe Connie wanted to say something.
So the way to do that is to take a hybrid star like this one, study the rotation.
The way to make progress in these stars is to have hybrid pulsators, study the rotational splitting from the P modes, then compute how that influences the frequencies from the G modes in the traditional approximation, and then we can do something.
Yeah, but if you have only G modes like in that one?
No, we have P modes in that one also.
Oh, okay.
The ones observed from space, we have two more cases not yet out in the literature. They all have P modes as well at very low amplitude. But they are there.
Was the rotation clear?
Okay, that's that again.
So the next talk is by Hideaki Sato. On theory of massive